Hello and welcome to Jim Brown's Outrigged Capercast of Modern Nautical Lore. I'm Jim, the old Sea Runner guy, and this is my ongoing collection of oral stories about contemporary seafaring watercraft and their people. It's been a revolutionary sea change just since World War II. Now, around here, I sometimes get interrupted, but aside from that, I hope you'll find this to be a fun and interesting boat ride, so welcome aboard.
I'm Christy, and I have to interrupt sometimes. Jimmy cannot keep track of things like this, so it's up to me to tell you that this is caper number one. It's part one of the Woody Brown story. There's two parts because Jimmy sometimes suffers from verborrhea. Also, I can warn you when to stick your fingers in your ears, like right now.
I was Nature Boy! I could see air! Yeah, that's what Woody Brown said when I asked him how he had managed to become such an expert glider pilot. I'm no relation to Woody, but he certainly had a profound influence on my life, and I wish he was here to welcome you to my capercast about him. Ever since I was a little kid, I've loved to watch the soaring birds. They can fly without flapping their wings. Yeah, sometime back in the 1930s, Woody had survived a glider crack-up in which he had crushed his Adam's apple, so he always spoke with that very hoarse falsetto, which, with your permission, I will not continue to try to emulate. So the last time I saw him was in 2005, I guess, and he was still talking about the soaring birds. They could fly without flapping their wings, he said, if I could just be like that. Well, if anybody came close to being like that, it was Woody Brown. He said in his teens, he used to sleep on the concrete floors out at Mitchell Field, Long Island, just to be around the airplanes. And that's where he met Lindbergh. So Woody learned to fly, but then he went up to Elmira, New York, where there was a big sailplane competition going on. And that's where Woody learned about gliders. And he came away believing that powered aircraft were pretty crude. He said, I can't resist. With enough horsepower, you can make a barn door fly. But a glider, now, to stay up there without any engine, that requires perfection. And I've just carried that with me all the way.
Okay, Jimmy, that's enough of that. And why all this stuff about airplanes?
Oh, that's Christy. I warned you about her in Capercast number 0, the introduction to this whole series. And if you haven't heard that, you might want to give it a listen. It'll let you know a bit more about what you're in for here. But anyway, that's Christy. She's my digital assistant, so to speak. She sometimes reads to me in the background. I've written about Woody in the past, and she can read it to me out loud because I can't see well enough to read it anymore. But I can let her kind of reconstitute my memory, and I can then sit here and tell you the story. So Woody's aviation background was just the first of several stars that aligned themselves in the heaven to make it possible for him to bring us what I think of as the first truly modern, that is, lightweight, seafaring vessel. Now, the second star to align itself in the heavens was aquatic. It was surf riding. Woody had been a sailor, but sailing was not enough for him in those days, pre-war, so he became a surf rider in Hawaii. And in fact, he was one of the few guys that dared to try to ride the giant waves on the windward side of Oahu, in the so-called swastika boards. They were big wooden planks or boxes with rocker in the bottom, and they were not controllable on the steep and fast-moving crests of those giant waves. And so he and his friends developed the modern surfboard, very lightweight with a straight, flat run and a fin in the stern, so that they could catch those waves without what he called sliding ass, which I take to mean broaching, or spinning out, swapping ends. Now, after the war, that invention would take surfing into a whole new realm. But the point is that here was a guy who understood both mediums. He could see air, That is, he knew enough about the atmosphere to know what was happening up there in the sailplane, and he could sense water. He knew how to manage in the interface between those two fluids of such differing densities. So those are the first two celestial factors that brought us into lightweight modern seafaring: unpowered flight and unpowered speed on water. Then the third star to align itself in the heavens was World War II. You know, they tried to draft Woody, probably in 1941, and he said, I ain't going. You can beat me and put me in jail and even shoot me if you want to, but I'm not going to go kill anybody. So he became a conscientious objector at a time when, boy, that just wasn't done. But they did assign him to a work detail out on Christmas Island, building an airstrip. And he said that the Seabees were doing everything they could to get help from the local natives. You know, the local fellows would come from all around the island and show up for work in their outrigger canoes. Now, Woody noticed the perfection in these things. They were built out of, 100% vegetable fiber, nothing more than sticks and strings. But he realized that they were highly technical. He saw them sailing and was convinced that they were high-performance machines, so he asked these guys to take him for a ride. So after work one night, they took him out sailing, and it happened that they fell in with the Navy's motor launch and sailed right by it. And Woody was agog. He said, hey, no white man's boat can do that. I'm going to go home and build me one. Well, all through the war, that image sustained Woody through some very difficult times. But he had a chance to really study those canoes, and he noticed something very strange about them. Their hulls were all lopsided. Now, these were single outrigger canoes, that is, a main hull with an outrigger only on one side. We call them proas, and we'll have a lot more to say about them in another Capercast. But the important thing for this story is that Woody saw a parallel between the lopsided or asymmetric shape of the natives' canoes and the asymmetric section of a glider's wing. Now, this gets to be a bit arcane, but...
Oh no, Jimmy. You cannot get into fluid dynamics here? Just tell the dang story.
Yeah, come on, Christy. This is part of the dang story. Now, just listen for a minute. A glider's wing extends out horizontally, and because of its asymmetric shape, it generates lift. Now, a boat hull, it extends downward into the water, and if it has an asymmetric shape, it helps prevent the wind pressure in the sail from pushing the boat sideways. Now, there's more to it than that with proas, and we'll have to take it up later, but Woody realized that what the natives were doing was making a shallow draft boat, one that's easily operated from the beaches, still have reasonable windward performance. That is, the wind did not push the canoes sideways too much, which is very hard to achieve without a keel on the boat, a deep keel or a deep daggerboard. The natives didn't have that, but their boats still worked great, and he decided to apply that principle to his boat. So after the war, he returned to his home in Hawaii with all the stars in alignment. He had his aviation background, and incidentally, I don't think I told you that he had been a championship glider pilot in gliders that he designed and built himself and that were somewhat less sophisticated than those of his competition. The then German champions in sailplaning had very sophisticated aircraft. He was able to beat them in altitude, duration, and distance with a very simple aircraft. So he had a tremendous understanding of the aerodynamic aspects. And he had also been a pioneering surf rider, helped to develop the modern surfboard. And he had also been exposed to the nautical wisdom of the ancient Micronesians and Polynesians. He realized they knew exactly what they were doing with their lopsided hulls. So with this rare, call it cosmic, convergence, Woody began to design himself a boat. He started out by building a 3-foot-long model, much like a model airplane. He sailed the model, learned a lot from it. Then he built a 16-foot prototype, which looked very much like the little beach cats, and I'll tell you why. It was a catamaran, that is, twin hulls, side by side with a bridge between, and it had asymmetric hulls, that is, each hull was flatter on the outboard side of the vessel than on the inboard side. The space between the hulls, the tunnel, had the fatter side of these lopsided hulls. So Woody deduced that the downwind hull of a catamaran would be, of course, the more deeply immersed. It would be forced down more than the upwind hull by wind pressure in the sails causing heeling. And for that reason, it would develop the necessary hydrodynamic force to prevent the wind from causing the boat to slide sideways, what we call lateral resistance, so difficult to achieve in a shallow draft boat. Now, most of us old boat nuts have heard of a guy named Hobie Alter. And I've seen a picture of Hobie standing together with Woody holding that model. Hobie lived in California, but he came to Hawaii to surf, and he met Woody. And he and Woody sailed that 16-foot prototype enough for Hobie Alter to go back to California and found the Hobie Catamaran Company and their first two products, the Hobie 14 and 16, which would become some of the most popular boats of all time, both had asymmetric hulls.
Come on, Jimmy. You're getting stuck in technicalities again. What does all this have to do with seafaring?
I'm coming to it, madam. But you're right, we don't normally associate beach cats with seafaring. They're too small, but we're coming to a transition here. Like the natives' canoes on Christmas Island, beach cats have to come and go from the beach. And what beach is that? Well, Waikiki, of course. And like many beaches in the tropics, Waikiki requires sailing over a long stretch of very shallow water with coral reef beneath. So Woody knew that his boat could not have appendages protruding down from the bottom. No fixed keels, no dagger boards. In the little boats, he could have kick-up rudders. But now he was going to build a big one. Why? Because when sailing his little boat from Waikiki, he realized that everybody, all the tourists, wanted to go for a boat ride. After 3 days of sitting in the sun and swizzling Mai Tais, they were bored. They wanted to do something. So Woody started taking people for rides, and they offered to pay him. And he saw an opportunity. These were really thrilling rides he was giving. But in his little boat, he could only take one or two people at a time. He realized that in order to make any money, he was going to have to be able to carry, at least 6 people. And thinking of this boat as an aircraft, he calculated that in order to carry 6 passengers and 2 crew, he was going to have a boat at least, 36 feet long. He needed a generous cockpit in the bridge, big enough to handle 8 people, 2 of them working the boat. And to come and go from the beach with a boat that big, he definitely did not want to have to deal with kick-up rudders. So he devised his asymmetric hull forms to include a fairly vertical, only slightly overhanging stern post. And he hung his rudders on the sterns behind the hulls, so that when sliding on and off the beaches, or maybe sliding over coral, the hulls would protect the rudder. So now, with all the stars aligned and his parameters firmly in mind, he was able to start construction, together with his friend Alfred Kumalai, who was a gifted woodworker. They put together a fantastic machine. I can't get too techno-talky about all of the construction details here, but I must emphasize that this vessel was built as if to fly. Right, Woody brought modern wooden aircraft construction techniques into boating in 1947. Now, there was one other star, call it a planet, that came into the sky at this time, right after World War II, commonly available, became materials like plywood, aluminum, fiberglass, and synthetic cordage for sails and lines. All of these things contributed to the lightness of Woody's boat. When it came time to launch the boat, Woody just got a bunch of his friends together, and they picked it up and carried it to the water. Woody said, "You know how Hawaiians are always trying to have a good time. Well, while we were carrying the boat along, a couple of boys got in between the hulls and reached up underneath the wings and made like they were carrying the whole thing on their fingertip." Well, I've lingered on the point of lightweight because that really is what makes a modern boat modern, is its weight to power ratio. How much sail area to how many pounds of water does the vessel have to push out of the way in order to get through? And Woody was the real progenitor of the first lightweight seafaring multi-hull. And so it is at last that we come to seafaring, and I hope you're happy, Christy.
Good grief. It's only taken him 15 minutes and 36.627 seconds to get here, and he's proud of it.
All right, madam, we don't want to get to the crescendo before the end. Anyway, Woody and Alfred and their Hawaiian friends were really impressed with their money-making tool. They named it Manu Kai, Seabird, and the thing really did soar across the water. His joyrides under sail would become popular, and as a matter of fact, that boat and others like it would become Woody's meal ticket for the next 40 years. But for now, Woody and his friends began to undertake to sail the boat offshore. They discovered that she was capable of crossing these boisterous channels between Hawaii's high islands, and these are very challenging waters. The wind comes ripping down those channels and the waves reflect off of the islands, and it was clear that Manu Kai was big enough to contend with offshore sailing. She also was so fast and powerful that she required careful handling, but the boat was definitely capable of going to sea. And something else became clear at this point. She was something new under the sun. She was in no way a recreation of her ancient counterparts. She was not a replica or recreation of some Stone Age artifact. Now, she might have been part sailplane and part surfboard, but she was more like Siamese twins, you know, mirror image Siamese twins joined at the wing. She was a new kind of creature, you know, perfectly adapted to the local waters and to the global context of the time. Indeed, a new species of boat.
Hey, Jimmy. Time's up. Don't tell me that was your so-called crescendo?
Ah, no. Well, I guess sometimes hecklers are right. I have dallied with the details. And Christy insists that we keep these capers down to something less than 20 minutes. The trouble is that there's a whole lot more to say about Woody Brown and his tremendous influence on modern marine architecture. He was mentor to many of us besides Hobie Alter. And I really want to tell the whole story, so we'll go on from here in Capercast number 2. And I promise that before the end of that one, we'll go on a seminal sailing event.
Right. He gets all puppy dogish when folks come for another boat ride. He even wags his tail when you tell him what you don't like about his capers. His email goes to outrigged.org@gmail.com. Tell him what you really think and I'll read it to him myself. For more info about the Outrigged project, you might enjoy seeing www.outrigged.org. And for other information products, see www.outriggedmedia.com. Bye-bye.